Blog Talk Radio.
Hi there, this is Fran Lewis, and this is Focus Discussions. I am your host, I am your interviewer, I am an educator, and I'm a book reviewer. And this is a very special show. First of all, I want to thank the people at Blog Talk Radio for featuring this show and making it really special to stand out. And the reason it stands out is because five stories of in an anthology titled Love Bites, each with a special message and a story. The first focusing on friendship and trust, the second breaking down walls and understanding, and the third focusing on trust, overcoming fears and hopes for the future. The fourth, learning to share your life and overcoming obstacles, and last, going forward and burying the past in order to create two bright futures. Love Bites, in many ways, in these stories, we have to thank the authors who are here today for their great stories and amazing animals for coming to the rescue of the characters in so many heartwarming and humorous ways. I would like to announce each of the authors. The author of Love Unleashed, Laurie Foster. Welcome, Laurie.
Thank you so much. It's good to be here.
It's great to have you here. The author of Smokey and the Bandit, New York Times bestselling author, as Laurie is a New York Times bestselling author. Brenda Jackson, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. And we've got the author of Marley Wants a Hero. This is a really cool story by Verna DePaul. Hi, Verna.
Hi, Fran. Thanks so much for having me here.
I'm glad you're here. And we've got Dog Tags by USA Today bestselling author Catherine Mann. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. Thank you so much for featuring the book. We appreciate it.
I'm so glad this book is so cool. I really think that everybody should just go out and buy a couple of copies. And Main Haven by Jules Bennett. Hi, Jules. It's nice to have you here.
Hi, and I
have to announce the authors are donating all of the proceeds from Love Bites to the Animal Adoption Foundation, Hamilton, Ohio, a charitable organization. So I'm going to start by asking, Laurie, could you tell everybody about this organization and why you decided to write the books based on these animals that bring everybody together?
Oh, sure. The Animal Adoption Foundation, it's aafpets.com online, is local to me, and I've seen them grow over the years, get bigger and better. I've known the people that run it for a long, long time. They are so compassionate, so wonderful, and it's a no-kill shelter. So if an animal goes there, you don't have to worry that they're going to overstay their welcome as it is. I always want to do something for animals, but I can't go in and sit with them and walk them because then I just leave crying. So to me, I try to do something else, you know, that's helpful. So that's why we try to donate instead. And I leave that going in and consoling the animals and petting them and loving on them to people like Catherine Mann, who's so much better at it than I am because she's a stronger person that way.
Oh, so, Catherine, you can do that? You've done that?
I do foster animals that come into the shelter when if puppies come in under the age of 8 weeks, they have to go out to a foster home until they're old enough. You can't legally adopt out a puppy until it's 8 weeks old. So they need a foster home to go to where they can get at least two rounds of puppy vaccinations, socialization, and, you know, a good healthy start before they go to their forever home. So over the years, yes, I have fostered about 100 animals overall, not at one time.
Oh, wow.
all at different times.
She's my hero.
Oh, well, thank you. You know, I do try to go up to the shelter as well and exercise some of the animals when we can. Our Humane Society here in the Panhandle, it's the Panhandle Animal Welfare Society. When a dog goes into adoption or a cat, it stays there until it's adopted. But sometimes that can mean that a dog sits in adoption for 6 months, seven
wow.
months. And that's a long time, you know, to be in a kennel run. So shelters are very, very dependent on volunteers to come in there and give them that extra walk time, the extra time in the play yard, and help them keep their spirits up until that perfect family walks through the door.
So what happens if, God forbid, there's an animal that doesn't get adopted? What do they try to do for them?
We don't give up on the animal. And once it is in adoption, it stays in adoption, and we will keep exhausting all options. To we recently raised the money to fly a dog that had been rescued out of a hoarding situation, and we had tried to get him adopted for about 7 months, and just he was so under-socialized from his hoarding experience. But we found a family in Oregon, a lady who had experience with rehabilitating animals like that, and we raised the money to fly him to Oregon, and he lives on a beautiful farm. We got videos of him, and, I mean, it's tear-jerking to see him just come alive and flourish. Now, keeping in mind, too, though, that when people do adopt from a shelter, from, you know, a rescue or shelter, that does enable another animal somewhere else that perhaps was on the sad list to then be rescued as well in shelters that don't have the option of keeping an animal forever.
You mean there are shelters that we hear about that they, if the animal is there too long, they will put them down? That's sad.
There are ones that the county-run shelters that are run by county dollars, they cannot turn away any animal that comes onto their doorstep. So sadly, sometimes, you know, when you have a situation with like a hoarder where 60 animals are turned over to a county shelter and they only have so much space, so that's why it's so important to adopt from either a shelter or a rescue like the organization that Lori was saying about, because when you adopt from Lori's, then that gives them the space to go to one of these overburdened shelters and pull some of their animals as well.
Well, and I know the AAF has some animals that have just stayed with them. They've become their pets there because there's always a volunteer there. There's the people that work there. And the animals don't know that that's not a regular home. That just is their home. And they get to visit with all the other animals, and they end up staying there. And ours will also send out a newsletter and tell you if there's a special needs animal, something that, you know, a cat or a dog that needs a surgery, God forbid an animal that's been abused that needs some special care.
Wow.
And that's one of those times where I bawl my eyes out and donate, because I can't, unlike Catherine, I can't go up there because I would just be a blubbering mess. But I'll donate then, and so do a lot of other people. And, you know, they read that and they go and they help out.
And that's awesome. I was just going to say there are so many ways to help, and that's like what Lori was saying. Even donating a bag of food, you know, is huge. Uh-huh. Is a huge, huge help to shelters.
That's amazing. You know what? You don't even know half of them that are around in each of the neighborhoods. It's really sad that the papers don't even ask you or just, you know, put flyers out or something to donate food or where these shelters are that you can actually help. Do they ever bring the dogs or the dogs to hospitals for kids that are, you know, in children's hospitals?
They actually do. There's another organization in my neighborhood. I've done other of these charity books to help them, and it's called the One Way Farm for Abused and Abandoned Children. And if I can explain this without crying, the AAF will work with the One Way Farm when an animal has a baby, or puppies rather. They'll take the puppies and the mother dog to the One Way Farm to show these abused children how a mother is supposed to care for her children. And it, you know, a lot of times animals can reach kids in a way that other people can't. That, you know, the children have learned not to trust people. The animals have learned not to trust people, but there's a special bond between kids and pets. So there's a lot of times, and I'm going to start crying, there's a lot of times the two of those will work together.
Well, I work with New York City public school system, and I work with kids that were abused, and it's really sad. It's really sad, and is there any way to help them, to give them the power to trust an adult? It's even better. So let's talk about Love Unleashed. That was the first story in the book. That was really good. Can you tell everybody something about the story and how come you chose the specific animal in that story to be the focal point? Because without the animals in the story, people, they just wouldn't have happened.
Which book was it you said? My phone linked.
Oh,
mine?
Love
okay. Okay. I thought maybe you were talking to me, but my phone made a funny noise and I missed it, and I didn't want to step in and talk on someone else. You know, I'm an animal lover. We're always overrun with pets here, and I see these great personalities that they have. And I know my kids will come to visit with their dogs, and there's some of their dogs that my dog likes and some that my dog doesn't. So they have these fun little personalities. I have a 7-pound Chihuahua right now and a 23-pound Maine Coon cat, and the two of them are like best friends. Now, we also have two other cats that my dog can't stand, but for some reason, she made friends with the 23-pound cat. Well, he makes friends with everybody. He's just one of those kind of cats. And so you see these really unique personalities in the animals, and it seems very feasible to me that two people that had animals that were friends would end up spending more time together drawn together because of the animals being friends. You know, just like you take your kids to visit people they're friends with, you would take your pets to visit pets they were friends with. If you're a pet lover like me, you would. And so that's it just seemed like the animals knew better than the people did, that they kind of belonged together in one family.
Yeah, that is so cool. So tell everybody about your specific story and which animal you chose.
Well, I had a cat and a dog, and my grandson is almost 7 years old, and we were talking one day that if we ever got another cat, he'd want to name it Kate, C-A-T-E, so all you had to do was add an E, and if we had a dog, we could name it Doug, so all we had to do was add a U, and he said if we got a horse, we could name it Horace, and I said, no, we're not getting any horses. We might work on the dog and the cat. And that just kind of got me thinking about a story where people would go and adopt a Kate and a Doug, and they would be friends. And, you know, the guy adopted the cat and the girl adopted the dog. And they were friends together and they were neighbors. And they both really cared about the other, but each thought the other was just a really good friend and didn't want to damage the friendship by pushing for more. But, you know, as animals, they seem to have a sixth sense about these things. And so the animals kind of brought them together in a way that the people didn't realize they could be brought together. So, I like to give animals
really cool.
a lot of credit.
I know my mother-in-law had a beagle, and Randy sort of ran her life before she died. And we would go there, and Randy had the chair. Randy had his own bed, and Randy was just everything. He was a great dog. He was a really cool dog, and he sort of made her life bearable. And she would talk to him as if he understood her, which he did. And I could swear that he used to answer her in his own way. But what made her crack up was that I would walk into the house and he would look at me and sit down by my right foot and look at me and go like, are you going to pet me with those long nails and, you know, make me feel better? Because you're the only one that knows how to do that. Yeah. And I used to be afraid of dogs. He was like the most beautiful, perfect dog in the whole world. He's so amazing. So, you know, I miss him kind of.
I think they're all amazing. My oldest son adopted this dog that would have been put down from another shelter because it's missing a bone in its foot. So when the dog walks, her name's Tink, when she walks, she kind of just flops that extra foot because there's no bone in it. And it looks like she's, you know, somebody just broke her leg and didn't get her taken care of, but she's actually just missing a bone. And she was this homely little thing and could look kind of like a squirrel. And my son will say, this dog loves me more than anything else in the whole wide world. And he's just really close to her. And, you know, and she senses that. So, you know, animals are intuitive, and they're wonderful, and they know good people when they see them.
Yeah, kids do also, believe it or not, and they know
yes,
who to trust.
Yes, they do.
I know, as an educator, the kids would say to me, well, you could say something to us because you love us, and then someone can say the same thing. They don't really care. They can tell you. They're really astute. They know better than adults, and they're more perceptive. So I'm going to come back to Lori in just a minute. But, Brenda, tell us about Smokey and the Bandit and about what animal you chose in your story. And Quest is really hot, I got to tell you.
I love her title.
Thank you.
I know.
Gosh, I chose two Yorkies because I own two Yorkies. I inherit both. One from my son, who's living in China, who took a Yorkie puppy to China with him so he could have company, and while he was living in Beijing working for the State Department. And last year we went over there, and that was the first time we had seen the puppy since he was like 3 or 4 months old, and here he was almost 2 years old. And then my son broke the news to us that he was being reassigned by the embassy to South Africa for 2 years,
oh,
and he
wow.
needed to keep Mookie. That's the name of the dog. So we're looking like, what? You know, we've never had a dog before, inside dog. The boys always had outside dogs, but we're like, no, he's an inside dog. He has to have this. And so I'm like, I don't think that's going to work. But it did work out, and so it worked out so well that when we had the opportunity to visit a shelter here, we were able to save a New Yorkie who was a year younger than Mookie, who was, the parents of the family gave him up. He was really, looked really bad, and it was hard for me to even say, are you sure he's a Yorkie? They said, yeah, he just needs a lot of love, he needs to be fed. And everything. So we adopted him, and I wish you could see that dog today. His name is Capone, and he have two beautiful male Yorkies. But in doing the stories, one of the things that everybody ever told me was like, you need to get your dog taken care of. You know, if you don't want any puppies, you need to get them taken care of.
Uh-huh.
So then, of course, when I was beginning to write this story, I'm like, what if, because it's so important. Well, you know, if you don't want any puppies, then make sure your dog are taken care of as far as being spayed or neutered. What if these two responsible adults overlooked such an important thing and somehow their dogs got together?
That's a great part.
And whammo, you know, it's like, you know, because we think of our dogs as our children. So this lady went up to this guy and said, your dog got my dog pregnant. What? You know, I'm holding you responsible.
That was so cool.
So from there, I just wrote the story of Raquel and Quest, and I just had fun with it. And I really appreciate Lori for inviting me to be a part of this because it was wonderful, and I could get right into it because of my love for my two dogs. Yes.
I'm so glad that Lori sent me this, and I'm really glad that Erin sent me Lori's first book, and then I decided that we were able to do this. Because this book is really great, and, you know, when you're sitting there and you're reading a whole bunch of other books and you want to read something to make you smile and laugh, you got to read Love Bites, because it'll cheer you up. And it'll make you understand that animals are really special and we need to do something to make sure that they're protected. So
why?
That is, right? Exactly. You know, I'm a firm believer and advocate to just like, I don't, abuse gets me upset in any way, shape, or form. Child abuse, animal abuse even more, because they're defenseless and they can't defend themselves. So we're going to talk about Verna's book. Tell us about Molly Wants a Hero, and you chose the most original animal of all.
I did. I chose a parrot. So
yes,
Gator is a green macaw, and he was adopted by my heroine Molly when his owners and her grandparents passed away. And the reason why I chose a parrot was because I write romantic suspense, so even though this was a short story and it was going to be lighter, I wanted to add a suspense element to my story. And Molly is a crisis worker. She takes phone calls from people who are having troubles and troubled thoughts and just need somebody to talk to. And I really liked the idea of giving her a pet that also had a voice, because that could help her in the end.
Yeah.
And Molly, part of the reason why she's a crisis counselor is she experienced, she was a victim several years back. And in this story, she does get attacked. And that's how she meets the hero of the story, Wade, who is a police officer. He ends up calling her initially. They talk on the phone, and there's definitely an attraction there. And then when she's attacked, he responds to the scene. So it was really challenging for me to mix sort of danger, but also romance, but also create this, you know, sort of funny, lovable character in Gator. And I think it worked out really well. And it was just one of the stories I've had the most fun writing.
Yeah, I really enjoyed them. But I think the one that I have to say that was really quite heartfelt and sort of brought things home when you're dealing with someone with a disability was Catherine's story. So tell us about dog tags and the animal in that one. That really hit home. My nephew was in Afghanistan, and he's a soldier. He's a sergeant in the Army. So when I read this, this is really, really, really good. So tell us about dog tags.
Well, first of all, thank you to your nephew for his service. I'm a military wife myself. My husband's served in the Air Force for 22 years, and my son-in-law is also in the Army as well. And so most of my stories do focus around military themes of some sort, whether it be a romantic suspense or even a home-based kind of story. Well, you know, a lot of us, I think, saw those videos going around on the internet of the soldier coming home and the dog racing down the sidewalk and remembering him. You know, may have been gone a year, but that dog still remembered. I think there was another one going around the internet of a female veteran who came back and her dog was there waiting at the airport with the dog sitter, the person who had kept the dog for that year while she was gone. And that really touched my heart because I thought of all of the soldiers over there and how, as they're doing what they're doing, so giving of themselves so selflessly, that we here finding ways to have people watching their pets. You know, at the shelter, we see a lot, sadly, of animals turned in because it's time to deploy and no one will take their pet for them or and dog sit. Mm-hmm. So that, for me, was the inspiration for this story. The hero heads overseas. He believes that he has set in place someone to watch his dog. He's left money for vet care, money for food, and that person really hangs him out to dry, and his dog ends up at the shelter. And the shelter arranges for a foster. And so Rachel fosters the dog for 11 months, and Brody and Rachel develop a relationship just via the Skype because she wants the dog to be able to Skype with with Brody while he's overseas. And then when Brody comes back, they're able to cement that friendship through the dogs that brought them together, you know, into a lifelong family for both of them.
That is just like a really hit home. It was just so really great.
Well,
and
thank
the
you.
Final, they're real. I mean, these stories are just so great that I just sat there with a box of tissues and at the end. I said, but you know what? I was, you know, you have a day that is everything goes wrong, and then you read that and you feel so much better. Seriously. So, Jules, tell us about Main Haven and the animal that you chose and something about Allison. Then I'm going to ask some specific questions about each story.
Okay. First of all, thanks for having us, and thanks to Lori for inviting me to do the anthology. Main Haven, I had horses, and it's set on a horse farm. I also have a little litter of cute puppies at the end that helped my hero propose. I hope I just didn't give away everything, but it's just so cute. This story was very personal. I used a lot of things from my personal life in it. I have a daughter who just absolutely loves horses, so I knew I had to do something with horses where I've learned so much about them with her. And the heroine, Allison, is very close to a personal friend of mine. The backstory. So I knew I wanted to put her in here because she's such an inspiring young lady. So that's basically how I came up with this story. The basics of the story is I have my heroine who lives on this horse farm, and it's basically the only true home she's known. She had a really bad childhood and a bad home life. And when the owner of the farm dies, he wills it to his nephew, who happens to be a house flipper. And that's another personal thing of mine. I love seeing those shows where people flip houses. So here comes, here comes this guy in ready, you know, to fix up this poor farm that's falling apart. And he ends up, you know, he knows nothing about horses. He knows nothing about farm life. And he just ends up falling in love with everything. So.
Well, my niece Casey wants to read this story because she does rodeo and barrel racing, and she has her own horse. She's 16. Yeah, so she absolutely loves, you know, horses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So this is her passion. Yeah, I think that's what she's going to wind up being, a horse trainer, actually.
Yeah.
So this is great. Those are the five stories, but I want to get back to Lori, and I want to talk a little bit about everybody's story, and then I want to get into some general questions about how do you decide, you know, who comes in. Well, Lori, you can tell us. How do you decide who you choose to write an anthology with, and how did you decide the theme for this particular one?
You know, I know so many. These authors all thanked me for inviting them into this, but I'm the one that needs to thank them, because not only do they donate a story that they don't get paid for, they spend a lot of time and energy promoting it also, and each one of them I know already are involved with the theme, you know, taking care of animals, loving animals. Obviously, I wouldn't ask someone who despised animals or had ever mistreated an animal in any way. So these women are already phenomenal people as they are. I've been a big Brenda Jackson fan for a long time, so that was exciting
too.
to get to do something with her. Catherine Mann, I am just so blown away by anyone who serves in the military. Plus, she's a phenomenal writer. I've been reading her latest series, and I think I'm all caught up on them right now. Jules Bennett and I have known each other forever because she and I belong to the same writer's chapter. She's got beautiful children. She comes to my house and she's good to my pets. And then Verna DePaul and I met not that long ago at one of the get-togethers. Was it 2 years ago, Verna, or three maybe?
Yeah, just about.
Somewhere in there.
The third one. Mm-hmm.
Third one. And she just impressed me as being such a really savvy, she's not so much a newer author now, but she was very new when I met her. And usually it takes people a lot of time to get as understanding of the industry. But she knew it right from the get-go. She's just one of those phenomenal people who writes phenomenal stories and is just a really fun person to be around. So I try to ask people that I like. I don't want to ask someone I don't like. So these are all people that I already admire a lot anyway. And then you go and you say, hey, how about you write a free story for me, and then you spend time promoting it, and then we'll donate all the money to charity. And they all say, sure, yes, I'd love to. You know, is that not an amazing thing? Does that not give you faith back, you know, and just in people in general? It does me. It always makes me feel really good.
It does, because it just made me feel a whole lot better, because the book, my eighth book just came out on Sunday, and all the proceeds from all of my books go to either the Kessler Foundation in memory of my sister, or Montefiore Einstein Hospital in memory of a fund that they set up for my mom when she passed away in March. So, yeah, Alzheimer's.
Very
and
good.
That. So it's great to give it to charity. And so what if you write it for free? You don't get paid. But you know what? It's just the fact that you're doing something to help animals is what really matters. So to me, that would be payment enough. And the fact that maybe somebody will find the cause of Alzheimer's and no one will get it. So that to me is payment enough also. But before I forget, I would love to. I run my own review site on Facebook. So if anyone ever wants reviews done, I have 11 people that don't get paid to do reviews. Neither do I. And my husband cracks up. He says, you don't get paid to do anything. I said, it's okay. I don't care. Don't worry about it.
It seems like you do it out of love, which is a good reason to do things.
Yeah, I do. And the only criteria, like I said before the show starts, on my review site is you can't write anything negative. You can only post a positive review. You can give 4 stars or 5, but you can't write anything nasty or negative about the book or anything that has a typo or something like that, because that's no big deal. So you have to write a positive review.
So if someone read a book they didn't like, they would just not review it. They would just skip that one.
I read a book last week that I really didn't like. I have to tell you. I won't tell you the name of it. It's my number one book that I really was hoping that I would never have to read. And I have to promote the book for whatever reason for the publishing company. What I did was I just summarized it. So
okay.
I will review it because I promised that I would. And you know what? Someone else might like it. Just because I didn't think it was great and I felt that they could have done a little bit something different with the main character doesn't mean that the book is incredible. So I just wrote a summary. The other people that are doing this blog tour with me are going to do the Q&A, and everyone's entitled to their opinion, but they're not entitled not to post something. They have to. But, yeah, if I get a book that I really don't find wonderful, I don't normally pan a book, and I won't turn a book down. I'll just summarize it, because I just feel that, you know, the author deserves something for sending it to me. I'm not going to just toss the book inside and say I won't read it. I have never done that before, and I won't. But I do have 14 inside that are staring at me. I'm solely, totally honored that I got this book, and I got the book by John Lesicrow this morning, so that he's sort of like in the middle of the pile somewhere. We'll get there. So tell everybody about Evan and Cinder, because they're really cool characters, and she really is amazing.
This is always hard for me, because I've written another single title since I wrote that, and I'm to the tail end of yet another single title right now, which means I've forgotten everything I did before this point in time. it always amazes me when authors remember their characters so well. I kind of write really fast, in a void. I get done with it, and I'm just really done. So, I hope if I have a lot of inaccuracies here, I hope readers don't yell at me about it. But Cinder lives next door, and she's a nurse. And I liked her name. I don't know, that name kind of came out of nowhere, and I thought, oh, what a cute name. A lot of times I steal names off Facebook. If I'm looking for a unique name, I just go back and see which of my Facebook friends have posted and see if they've got any cool names. I can, you know, take a first name and a last name and piece them together. But I really liked Cinder. I think I changed Evan's name like 10 times trying to find one that fit, that seemed right to me, you know. But, you know, Cinder's kind of one of those, she's a little bit chubbier than the perfect model, you know, ideal woman that we write about in books. I kind of like writing a more voluptuous woman. You know, I have 3 sons and a husband. I'm kind of small, but they always say they would rather a woman with a little more meat on her bones than not enough. So, you know, I take that to heart when I'm writing my characters, you know. And if I write a woman who's real slim, then I let her perceive that as a flaw. because if they had to live around the guys I do, they would think it was a flaw, since they seem to like, you know, women with some meat on their bones, as they put it. So she was, you know, she was a little bit thicker, but Evan and his brother and his friend, which I'm also writing those stories. Actually, his brother's story I've already written. You know, they all think she's really hot, but she just doesn't see it about herself. I mean, I don't know if I'd like to write a character who knew she was hot. You know, I think that would be a real turnoff. You know, if she just walked around. I think I read a book once where the woman was just so beautiful it was a handicap for, and I'm thinking, I don't like her. If you're walking around knowing you're so beautiful, it's a handicap, you poor thing. But anyway. I don't know. Can you hear me rambling? I don't know. And Evan was just an everyday guy who was afraid maybe he wasn't good enough for her because she worked in a hospital and knew doctors and important people, and I actually forget what the hell it was Evan did, but he did something more mundane, everyday type thing. And like I said, the dog Doug and Kate got them together. And I think she was attacked at the hospital and came home, and that got his testosterone going.
She was attacked, and they all had to protect her. You know, all
there
the guys
you go.
Came to her aid. I have to
remember.
You
remember. I wrote right up till the minute I called you on a scene here, and then I thought, oh, now she's going to ask about this other book, and I don't know what's going on. Let's talk to someone who knows their story better.
That's okay.
Talk to me.
We'll just go on to Brenda and talk about why is Raquel so steamed when she meets Quest. Oh, he's so cute, though. How could you get mad at him?
Because she found out that her babies were having a baby or babies. Her puppies were having a baby. Her puppy was having a baby, really. And she was upset because not even thinking that she could be just as responsible for not having the problem taken care of course, when she confronted him. And he, you know, not typical man, but, you know, most men, prove it. I don't believe it. No, couldn't have happened because my dog is, nope, he's not taken care of, but I left him in the care of a competent sitter, which we found out that wasn't the case. So she was kind of pretty upset with him because she had to confront him. And then when he opened the door, he was drop dead gorgeous. So that even made her even mad, even madder.
Yeah, he was drop dead gorgeous. And I was just trying to say, gee, you know, too bad his picture wasn't on the cover of the book. All the guys,
no.
All the main characters, the guys were really hot. But I'll tell you, in Laurie's story, I was very heavy when I was a kid, so I could identify with Cinder when I was growing up. I'm small and skinny now, so I can understand where you would walk into a room and say, oh my God, you know, she's so, my sister was thin and gorgeous, and there was me. So I know how that feels. But she didn't walk around and say, oh my God, I'm gorgeous, but I knew she was. So why is their encounter was hysterical. I mean, the humor in this story was absolutely hysterical. So what happens when he finds out that she's not lying?
Oh, gosh. When he finds out that she's not lying, then he knows. Then he, you know, upholds it. He says, okay, then I really need to do what I really need to do because it's really my responsibility. My cousin who kept my dog, you know, gave this outlandish story and passed her responsibility on as a sitter to someone else. So I really need to make things right. And so that's what he did. He went back to her. But by that time, he had checked her out and liked what he saw anyway and wanted to kind of, like, get to know her better as well. I like adding when I can. I'm not what you call a comical writer, but once in a while, I write a story, and I could just feel the characters, and I really felt Raquel and Quest, and I could just imagine their escapades going back and forth, like, no, he did, yes, she did, no, he did not, yes, he did, sort of thing. So, I just wanted to throw some humor in there, and I'm glad that it came across humorous in certain parts.
It did come across humorous, but the funny part was, why does he have her investigated? That was hysterical.
Oh, yeah. He has her investigated. He wanted to know more about her because he had a past, you know, with the NFL, and he knew how women were. And he just wanted to know, okay, I'm going to go out on the limb. I'm going to do what I'm supposed to do, but I want to know more about her, you know, personally, to see how she is, how responsible she is. And luckily, he had a brother, And it worked out fine because his brother was a story that I did for Blaze. And readers always wanted to know more about the family of, you know, the guy's brother. So that way I was able to introduce the brother in Lori's book. So that was good.
Well, I'm going to have to get more of your books to review, people, because I read a long time ago, I read Seduction. I know I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I told Verna before the show starts, I'm not supposed to tell anybody, but I don't care. I review for Manic Readers. Yes, I do. And at first they told me, you're not supposed to tell the author that you're the one that's reviewing the book, but what the heck. After I interviewed Cheryl Woods and Rayanne Thane, they said it was okay that I told the author. So I read Shades of Desire. It's really good. So I'm the reason she got 5 stars. I just won't tell anybody. And I don't give 5 stars to a lot of the books that I read on Manic Readers, I have to tell you. So it takes a lot. The book has to really be something. It has to have a message. And I don't take the erotica or others because I won't read them. Forget it. So we're going to come back to Brenda in just a moment because I'm going to ask everybody after we go all through all the books, you know, your websites, where we can get your books, what your next project is, when am I getting it to review, and a few other questions. And okay, let's talk about Molly Wants a Hero, Verna. So how did you decide to create, oh, he's so cute, though, Wade. And that was lucky that she met him on the phone. So tell us about them.
Wade came about because I go to an annual writing retreat in South Carolina and have discovered just the beauty of Charleston, have fallen in love with that city and wanted to write a Southern hero. And Wade is a Southern hero who comes from a very affluent family and very powerful, very wealthy family. But he has decided to follow his dream, which is to be a police officer. And he calls up Molly because he is on a call and needs her expertise about a suspect who seems to be having some mental challenges. And she advises him on that. While he's on the phone with her, he likes her. Through talking to her, he feels like he can trust her, and she's obviously very competent. And so he reveals that he's having some issues with his grandfather, his grandpa Paul, who he really loves. Mm-hmm. And he starts asking Molly some questions about Grandpa Paul and his propensity to start duck hunting when he's never been a duck hunter. It's not duck hunting season.
Mm-hmm.
And he's taken a couple of shots at mailboxes thinking that they're ducks. So Molly's just immediately drawn to this guy who obviously is just, I mean, a Southern guy, sounds sexy, obviously loves his grandfather. So they have this connection on the phone. And he makes an appointment to bring his grandfather later on, but before that can happen, he's paroling the area, and so he's in the area when she is walking to her car and gets attacked in the parking lot. So they get to meet earlier than anticipated, and it was challenging to, in a short story that's just about, you know, 15,000 to 20,000 words, create this immediate attraction between a cop who comes to this woman's rescue to try to keep things professional, but then also build this romance between them.
Yeah, well, it was a good romance between, you know what, in every one of the stories, though, it seems like something bad or nothing tragic happens and something good comes out of it, which is really great. So that's what makes each of these, but I love Gator. Sorry, he's so cool.
I'm so glad. He was so fun, right?
Yeah, it was. And, you know, yep, I can tell you that with every single one of these stories, you could write a sequel. You could definitely write a sequel. I mean, I would love to see where Cinder and Evan go, and definitely where Wade and Quest go, and Wade and Molly and Wade go, and Allison and all the rest of them. I would love to see what happens next to them because they're such dynamic characters. So, what does she learn about his family, and how does she help him, and why?
Well, she finds out that his grandfather is having some delusional episodes, and there is a medical reason for that comes up later on. She ends up going to a swanky fundraiser with her friend Nina, who actually is a main character of one of my books that I'm writing. So it was great that I got to introduce Nina and Molly's story, and we'll be writing about her in Shades of Passion, which is the third book in the trilogy that you were talking about, Fran. And, so mainly what she just finds out is just how close Wade is to his family, what an honorable man he is. They do solve what's happening with Wade's grandfather. She's able to help him, and they're able to move on to their romance. And Gator, because Gator does have a voice, he is able to help with the suspense element in the book. He has one of his quirks is that he quotes from action movies, so he quotes, I'll be back from the Terminator, or say hello to my little friend from the Al Pacino movie, and that was just really fun to write because, you know, he is a hero. Gator ends up being a hero with Wade in saving Molly, and they are a family at the end.
That is so cool. That is so cool. So we're going to get to the Army story now. And Catherine's story. Why did you choose to write about a soldier coming home from serving our country and meeting a girl with a handicap?
Well, as a military wife, you know, I'm drawn to those kind of stories, and that is kind of a natural fit for me. And my husband served for 22 years. So way back in the early days, he and I were lucky to get one phone call a week, you know, with a crackly phone line. And I remember my husband's grandmother saying, you know, because her husband served in World War II, that, you know, she was lucky to get a letter. Well, now we've got my daughter who's married to a soldier, and they're connected through the Internet and Skype and this kind of thing. So I thought a lot about that face-to-face kind of connection, and so that also came together for this story, which when you mention the heroine's handicap, she is wheelchair-bound, and so through her, since she and the hero have never met face-to-face because she's dogs, you know, she came in an emergency situation to dog-sit his dog, for her, she never tells him because through these Skype sessions with him, she's able to, in essence, walk again. And it's only when they meet, when he comes back from his deployment, that he learns of her accident.
Well, what message, this was a very touching story, you know, about Leah and Brody. So what message do you hope readers will come away with after reading this particular story?
I sure hope someone reads it and offers to watch a military person's animal for them when they deploy. And, maybe that's a kind of simplistic message, but I just hope, you know, we have so many people in the military that live in our neighborhoods, and I think we all assume that they, you know, they get by, they have their support. Well, we can always use more support. And to offer or to talk to your local shelter even and see, because we get shelters get emergency calls like this all the time, and if they had a list of people that said, yes, you know, I'm willing to foster your animal for a year, these soldiers will pay to have their regular vet visits and food and whatnot. So I just hope that'll touch someone's heart, and that through this story, you know, in addition to being able to help the shelter through the donation, but that also we'll see this reach out with, like, Brenda's story, and more people will stay and neuter their animals, and someone will offer to help a service member in need. But that's my hope, is that it will just keep giving through, I guess, a certain kind of educating readers and into problems that perhaps they hadn't realized existed.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they had, you know, I knew that people take in animals. I didn't realize it was to such an extent that they would be fostering. Do they ever monitor, after you give an animal, I know they're supposed to do it for children, but they don't do a very good job. I've dealt with ACS and organizations, you know, for children that are foster kids, and I've read about 10 books recently that were really sad about people that went through the foster system and how sad it really is. Do they monitor to see what happens after a pet is adopted to make sure that their families are taking care of these precious, you know, animals, and that they're not being abused when they're adopted?
Well, with the Humane Society, whenever you adopt a Humane Society animal, it is microchipped. And so if it lands somewhere else, that microchip pops up. You know, when you adopt a Humane Society animal, you have promised that you won't just give that animal away or give it up. So if it shows up anywhere else at another shelter, we know, you know, that was one of ours kind of thing, because you've got that record. You do check as they fill out an extensive application. I know this at our shelter, and I can't speak for all shelters, but the one where I serve on the board of directors, we have a very extensive application. And sometimes people get a little bit ruffled. They get their feathers ruffled a little bit when you ask, well, do you have a fence? do you have a vet lined up? But these are things, too, just to protect the well-being of these animals, because animals that have come to a shelter have already been through so much, some more abused than others, but just the sheer loss of someone that they have bonded tightly to, you know, to be dropped off, abandoned like that. You know, we really want to make sure that it's a good placement, because it is very traumatic for an animal to come back to a shelter again. I've seen animals come back where, you know, when we talked about we keep animals until they're adopted, but we do periodically have animals that will give up. And after, when they have been returned, you know, one or two times, they curl up in their kennel run, they won't play, they won't eat, and you can't make them, you can't force them to. And that, to me, is the most grievous part, and that's why I keep volunteering, because yes, it hurts me to be there, but it hurts me more to think that nobody will be there for that animal.
I know, it's like an older person that's in a nursing home. I know, I've seen it. You know, and then no one goes to visit, and no one cares, and then they don't get the proper care because there's nobody there to make sure that they get it. It's horrible. When someone's going to adopt a pet, any pet, do they don't adopt them that day when they come there? Do they have to investigate, or they check them out, or can they take the pet home that day if they feel it's a right fit?
Through our shelter, again, because I can't speak to all. You know, it's like any walk of life. There's great folks and great institutions and ones that maybe could use some spiffing up. But through ours, no animal leaves our shelter until it's spayed or neutered. So we do have
the AAF, they take care of it to make sure, because they actually, as soon as they get an animal, they spay or neuter it to make sure that it's already ready. But, yeah, the same thing, they don't just let animals leave. They investigate first.
And we spay and neuter the ones that are in there as our clinic is available. We have a discount spay and neuter clinic at the shelter, and where also people within the community can come and get their animals spayed and neutered at a discount price and can get their vaccinations at a discount price, which is helpful as well. But they do require at the shelter where I volunteer a interview process where everyone in the family comes in, no surprise. You know, puppies are no gifts of animals, because you need to make sure that everybody's on board. So all the kids that live in the house, the mom and the dad all come. If you have other dogs, they bring them in as well. As I always say, I have some neighbors that I absolutely adore, but I could never share a house with them. So it's kind of the same, Lori was talking about animals have such distinct personalities themselves, and you can have two great dogs, but they might not get along. So that's a part of the interview process. So, yes, it doesn't happen in an instant. We want to make sure it's a good fit and a keeper fit.
That makes me feel so much better. That's great, because I don't think a lot of people realize what it takes to adopt, you know, a child, the list to adopt a dog. It's just as precious, and it's good to know that there is a process. I want to make sure that I do speak to Jules about her book. We've got as much time as I can get. Main Haven, and talk about Allison and tell us about your story and about Jake and the kind of unusual encounter to start with.
Okay, Allison worked on a horse farm later in her teen years and grew to love the man that owned it, and he kind of became her father figure. And so she eventually, you know, as she got a little older, moved in. She kind of cared for him as he got older, and then he passed away, and he ended up leaving the farm to his nephew. And so he's the house flipper, and he comes in, you know, just ready to make this a quick deal of seeing what needs done, hiring a crew, getting it done, and moving on. And Allison makes sure, she wants him to see that this home is her home. It's all she's ever known. These horses are her family, and she wants him to see that, you know, he may not know anything about horses, he may not know anything about farm life, but she quickly teaches him. And plus they have, you know, his uncle, who was her father figure, they have that common bond, and she wants him to realize that, you know, she loved him just as much. So it's my story is more of an emotional story.
It is. It really is. and she was just worried that he was going to give up the house. So what did she learn about Jake and first impressions? Because sometimes when you see someone for the first time, you don't always get the right idea.
Right, and he's from a big city, so she thinks he's this big hoity-toity big city guy, and he's not. And you know, then there's the scene where he's got on his nice tool belt, and that's always good. And so she
too. He's hot too. Let me tell you.
Yeah. She quickly has a turnaround, and so does he. And I think he was expecting to come into this deal, you know, emotionless, like, you know, he does with most other houses that he buys and flips. So he was anxious to get back to his big city life and continue making the next dollar, and he just really does fall in love with this farm style.
Well, before I forget, and I don't want to forget, and I have a couple of more questions here, we're supposed to have another guest at 4, but I'm really not sure. She might have gotten, you know, the phones or something, so I'm not sure if the person's going to come. She does, that would be nice. If not, we're doing great here. I want to make sure everybody tells everybody their next project. Lori, what's next for you? Are you going to write another Arizona?
I'm done with that particular series, The Men Who Walk the Edge of Honor, except that I did agree to write a very short electronic story for Chris. So anyone that's read that series knows who Chris is. He was Dare's assistant, and he's gay, and I don't really write gay romance just because that's not what I do. But he became such a popular character, and I had so many readers asking me for his story that a story finally came to me. And I'm just going to do a very short electronic story just because I love my readers and I don't want any of them dissatisfied. And then in Trace's book, Alice was the secretary in that book, and she is the heroine. This gets so confusing. She is the heroine in the second book of my new series, which has nothing to do with the old series, except that Alice wouldn't leave me alone, so she's in the new series as well. So I'm sure readers will think that's a tie-in somehow because of what happened to Alice in that series, and, of course, that's in her book. But the new series starts in October with Run the Risk, and the second book that I'm working on right now is called Bear It All, and the third will be Getting Rowdy, and fourth, I have no idea what that title will be yet. We're still working on it.
Well, I'm sure Erin's going to send it to me. I have every faith in Erin to send it to me.
You go, yeah. You're talking about from Media Muscle, correct?
I was lucky when she sent me your book. I was like, okay, Lori Forster, okay, how did I get lucky to get this one? Yeah. As a matter of fact, there's another publicist from Media Muscle named Kate that's sending me a book called The American Family. I had no idea I was getting it, but I am now.
Well, wonderful.
So, yeah, they've been sending me an awful lot, but Erin is fantastic because she actually, you know, set this whole thing up, which is fantastic and great. So I hope I get that. And Brenda, what's next for you? What's your next project?
Wash. My next project is an anthology that's coming out in next month that I'm doing under my own publishing company for full-figured women. I do some stuff under my own publishing company that normally other publishers won't look at, like for full-figured women, a romance for full-figured women or romances for women or men over a certain age, like 50. My senior citizens always want a romance, so I'll do a book of anthologies just for them, and it will be an e-book. And then in September, I have a Westmoreland book, which is a desire, a Harlequin desire.
Well, I've got to get that. You see, my problem is that I can't read on my computer because my eyes start to bother me. So that's why I'm constantly asking for print copies and not PDFs. And that's why there are like 14 books staring at me inside. I just can't. My eyes bother me. But if anybody has a print copy of something they want me to read and review, that's fine. And my review is on my site, Read PDFs and eBooks, too. So if anybody wants my reviewers to review your books when they come out, you email me the PDF. I can get 11 people to do it, and I'm sure they won't even think twice about saying yes. I know.
My e-book always print at least 100 to 200 printed books because all my readers are not e-book readers, so I try to accommodate them by putting some of my books in print.
Good, because those are the ones I want. All of them. Those are the ones I want. And Verna, what's next for you?
The second book in my Special Investigations Group series comes out in September. That's Shades of Temptation, and that's you met Jace and Carrie in Shades of Desire. So this is their story, and I'm working on the third book in that series, which is Shades of Passion. And you also met the hero of that story, and Simon Granger. So that's my series with HQN. It's straight romantic suspense, and having lots of fun with that.
Oh, that is cool. I know that Laura, I'm not sure if Laura Miranda's books are also up on Manic Readers once in a while. I don't know if the publisher puts them up or if you put them up for review. But when I see those, I usually grab them because they just put the books out and they only have one copy of whatever, so you have to be lucky to get it. So when I saw Shades of Desire, I got lucky. Yeah. There was one or two authors that I really, really loved, and they said, well, we only have one copy of the book, and if you get there too late or the book comes up for review and you just don't grab it right away, someone else is going to do it. And I just got luck. Like I said, it's so vertical. Okay, I'll do that. So,
well, I'll be sure to make sure you get a copy of the other two books in the series.
Oh, that'll be really cool. That'll be great. And I want to make sure that, where am I here? Jules, what's your next project? And then I need to know, Catherine, what's your next project?
I have a brand new series starting with Harlequin Desire. It's called the Alpha Brotherhood series, about a group of troubled teens who ended up all getting sent to the same military reform school. And once they graduated, their headmaster turned out actually worked for Interpol. And so because they are Harlequin Desire heroes, are all now rich and famous. They use their world globetrotting ways as kind of a cover for doing freelance work for Interpol. So that series, we've already got three books underway. It starts in August, but we've already got three underway with more in the works. I also, in September, have another Dark Ops book, which those are top secret military testers. Book five,
Good.
I'm sorry?
That sounds good.
Yeah, so book five in the Dark Ops series is coming out in September, and then I have more of my Air Force pararescue men stories in the works as well. I've got two more of those slated for the beginning of 2013.
So how many books does everybody write in a year? You guys write an awful lot of books in one year, an awful lot. More than one. So let me see, Jules, I didn't get, what is your next project after this?
My next project is, it's called Whatever the Price. It comes out in September from Harlequin Desire. It's book two in my Hollywood series. And then at the start of 2013, I'm going to have three books out right in a row. So I'm busy working on those.
So these are strictly romance novels. Has anybody ever decided that they want to write a good murder?
No.
those are my favorite. Like, I love a little romance with suspense and maybe a murder in between here. Yeah. I think those are my favorites. As a matter, I've been getting an awful lot of self-help books, and I just read a book about
self-help to murder.
self-help for murder. Yeah, I was wondering, yeah, self-help for murder. I almost felt like self-helping myself for murder with some of them that I get to read, but what can I say? Like I said, I just read one on North Carolina sterilization, and I cried the whole time. It was probably one of the best books I've read in a long time. So I get everything in the mail, just never know what friend's going to read, but romance is great, and a good murder would be great to go along with it. What can I say? I have a couple more questions, and then I think my second guest, I'm not sure that the person that's supposed to come on the second hour is going to make it. I have a funny feeling that it's not going to happen, so we'll just do the best we can. So if you could, Laurie, if you could have added one more chapter to this story, what would you have added? If you could have made it like another 1,000 words or more, another couple of pages, what would you have added if you could add one more chapter?
Oh, geez. Ask me something tough, why don't you? I don't even remember the book anymore. I loved Evan's brother Brick, and I loved his friend Jesse.
Too.
So I no sooner finished that than I sat down and wrote Brick's story. So I guess I would have put more of I know that's a weird
more
name
Brick
for
story.
A guy Brick, but I explained it in his story. But I sat down and I wrote Brick's story real quick just because I enjoyed him. I thought he was a lot of fun. So I guess I probably would have added more for Brick.
That's good. You see, that wasn't such a tough question.
I had to flounder around for a minute there and think of something. Everybody else is so good and smooth, and they know their books so well. I think I don't know. They're much better.
No, you're fine. You're fine. You know what? You write so many books, you can't remember. I've read almost 700 in 2 years. So sometimes, you know, I'm sitting here with the review in front of me, not this time. But, if a book is, like, if I read it 6 months ago and the person's coming on my show 7 months, I've got to have the review in front of me because, yeah, you're going to forget, you know, what the book is about. And you don't want to interview somebody and not know who the characters are. That would really be bad with a title.
Well, it's the same thing for me writing them. You know, I mean, I think people talk about the book of your heart. I don't really have a book of my heart. I just really love writing. And I love the book while I'm writing it. But as soon as I'm done, I'm done. And I just, you know, people will write and say, what are the characters up to now? I'm like, nothing. They're done. They're not doing anything. I could never write a really long series because I just get, you know, once I'm done, I'm done. But
you see, and I was hoping you were going to bring Arizona back one more time. Well, I got that last, that was the last book in the series, right? So that's
yes,
the one that they sent me, and I was hoping she would come back and do some more damage and whatever.
Murder
so if
a
you
few
could
people
added,
for you.
Yeah, yep, exactly. I can give you a list.
Yeah.
it's one of those days, what can I tell you? If you could have added one more chapter to Smokey and the Bandit, what would you have added? Would you have added anything?
I think I would have added what happened. I think the book ended after Smokey had the puppies. I would have gone on and just told how they courted after. I would have added that chapter into it.
Yeah, I was hoping you would do that. I still think you guys can make a series out of this whole thing again and bring them back. And what about your story? If you could have added another chapter to Molly and Wade, what would you have added, Verna?
I just, same thing. I would have loved to have given them more time just to have fun together because they met under such dramatic circumstances. Things moved really fast before she was in danger again. So just, I would have given them more romance and just more time to get to know each other. That would have been fun to explore.
Yeah, that's good. And, Catherine, what would you have added to this particular story?
The heroine's mother was such a lovely lady and fun character. I think I would have liked to have given her a little bit more time and maybe even a little bit of a romance herself. I really enjoy exploring different ages for, you know, romance couples. People in their 20s, people in their 30s, people 40s, 50s, you know. I think romance isn't locked down to any one particular age or time in our life, and so I would have liked for her to have had a little bit more space.
I totally agree. Definitely agree. You know, I'm in the middle somewhere, so people say, you know, you get to a certain age, or you get to any age that you are is great for romance. It doesn't really matter. You could be 105, and as long as you still have the energy, why not? it's just my sense of humor, what can I tell you? So, Jules, what's next for you?
I already answered that. Do you want me to tell you what I would have added?
Oh, I'm sorry. What chapter would you have added? I'm losing me here, too. I'm looking at the paper saying, okay, I forgot to ask her. What would you have added to this about Jake and Allison? Maybe you would let him teach him how to ride a horse a little bit more, maybe put him in a horse race.
Absolutely. I would have. I really could have turned that into a single title because I would have had so much fun with her teasing him on the farm, you know, with him not knowing anything. I would have had so much fun making that a longer story. I just would have made everything longer.
I know, and hopefully.
That's what she said.
I knew you were going to say that, Lori. I knew it.
I tried not to since we're on.
I know
on
you
the
did.
Phone.
I knew as soon as that came out of my mouth, you were going to say that.
Sorry. Shame
so
on me.
Before we close or whatever, originally I have to tell you we were supposed to have, and I don't know what happened, and I did confirm it 5 times. Margaret McLean was supposed to be here, and she's the president of the Mystery Writers of America. I don't know what happened, and her publicist just said that she emailed her to remind her. I'm not sure if she forgot. I don't think so. I think maybe her phone's or something. So, you know, we'll give her a couple of minutes, but that's, you know, what can I say? So where can we get your books, Lori? Where can everybody get them?
Pretty much everywhere that sells books, I think.
Yeah,
you know, it's always funny. I'll tell you a really quick funny story. Carly Phillips, who's a lovely person, wrote me and said, your books are all over the place here where I live. And she can never find her own there. And I said, which is funny because I can never find my own where I live, but Carly Phillips' books are everywhere. So it seems like they sell your books every place except for where you live. you know. But otherwise, you can get them just about everywhere.
Well, you could tell Carly that Fran said that if she goes on Manic Readers, her books are up for review. All of them.
I'll tell her.
All of them. And I've seen them in Barnes & Noble. I've seen yours. I walked in the other day, and I go like, she's going to be on my radio show. And they just look at me like, yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah, bookstores are always a safe bet.
Yeah.
But, you know, like if you go into Target or Meijer or Kroger or Walmart, you know, and they always have a much more selective bookcase in there. For some reason, I don't see mine in my area real often. When they first come out, I do. But Carly's are always just hogging up the shelves. So,
yeah,
I like to tease
her. Your books are in Barnes & Noble. I do. I've seen them. I've definitely
good.
Seen them.
Yeah, bookstores are a good hit.
But if you Google yourself, and I found that out because I have 8 titles myself, and I didn't know, there are so many online bookstores that you just don't know exist. Besides Kobo Books, there's Unread and Dada Books and Best Stories and Best Children's Stories. There's a whole bunch. So if you ever Google yourself, you're going to find that your book is out in about 2,000 different sites that people are buying them. And yours are probably in India and China and Japan like mine are too. So you just don't even know. Yeah, they're every single place. So, Brenda, where can we get yours?
Everywhere books are sold.
Everywhere. You know, my final question is, I mean, you really, it's amazing. For new authors that want to get into writing romance novels and get it picked up by Harlequin or a traditional publisher, what would you suggest? Because that's one of the questions that everybody asks, because there are a lot of people on my site that write romance novels that get them self-published, and they really are good. A lot of the self-published writers are really good. But how do they get into Harlequin? How do you get them to notice you?
Are you directing it to someone in particular?
Anybody. I'll jump in. I would suggest looking at writing chapters in your local area, like Romance Writers of America has a number of chapters in every single state, and that enables you to kind of network in and find those connections, make those connections, meet, you know, some of the editors and such face-to-face. Also, Harlequin in particular has a very, very active website, harlequin.com, where they have a Learn to Write section, and they run a lot of contests. Writer contest where editors will read the first chapter and then the winner, you know, gets whatever it is that they've set up for that particular contest. But Joanne Rock, for example, was a finalist in the Blaze contest back when Blaze was first getting up off the ground, and her book, the editor read it and it was published, and that was how she broke in at Harlequin. So I think just those kinds of connections can be particularly helpful for someone just starting out.
Well, I'm going to put that out because the author that asked me this lives in Scotland, actually. And a lot of other authors on my review site will say to me, "You know, how do I get in? How do I get my book published?" I said, "You know what? I can only tell you what I think I know, but I don't. You know, you don't know. I mean, my 7 books are self-published, and my last 2 got picked up by World Castle. I was really lucky. So you just don't know. I'm going to tell them that, and I'm going to tell them to look into that, because for new authors, it's hard. And my final question is, what happens when you get a review that really is awful? What do? Do you just ignore it?
You laugh about it because everyone's going to get them. You know, you're not the only one. Everyone gets it. You know, I mean, it's just a fact of life. That's the thing I try to tell new authors, is not to get too freaked out over that stuff, because they're there. You know, some people truly hated the book, and some people just like being mean. You know, and you can usually tell who just didn't even really read the book. You know, they just wanted to find something nasty to say. And you know,
that's
if
true.
Somebody writes me and tells me they read my book and they hate it, I always apologize and tell them I'm sorry, because I know it's everybody's kind of living on a budget these days. Very few people are rolling in the dough, and you hate to think that somebody wasted their money on a book they couldn't enjoy. You know, there's no guarantees.
I agree with you. I reviewed Kristen Johnson's book, Guts, and I gave her a good review because I thought it was great. And she emailed me to tell me that she thought it was wonderful, but the person before her said they didn't like it. And she said, well, the next time, don't read the next thing I write. I mean, you know, I've had authors that have emailed me and said I got a 1-star review, and I've read the review, and I'm saying, you know what? Person didn't read your book. They just said, I don't like the character, so the book was bad. What does that mean? They didn't tell you anything, and they didn't read your book, and I wouldn't get bent out of shape. I got a bad review on my last book, and the person didn't read it. She just said, you wrote the word chill too many times, so I want my money back. And Amazon will remove a review like that. if you get a whole bunch of good reviews that have, you know, have substance and basis, and you call Amazon and tell them this person didn't read the book and it was in a really nasty review for no reason, they'll take it off.
Yeah, but I don't even worry about it. You know, I mean, people just want to vent sometimes.
You don't have to worry about it.
Look for reviews to tell me anything or to enlighten me in any way. Or, I mean, to me, reviews, it's just, it's nice to know when a reader enjoyed it, and if they didn't, I feel bad for them because they wasted their money, and that's about as much thought as I put into it.
Yeah, you know what? You got a good attitude because you can't get bugged by it. But you know what it is? New authors want someone to say that book is great. And then they figure if they get like 200, you know, great reviews, if you get too many great reviews, they think it's phony anyway, that maybe a traditional publisher or somebody will take the book as a movie or they'll love it. So did you have my last question before I say thank you and tell everybody what I better tell everybody? August 16th, everyone. Iris and Roy Johansson will be here for Close Your Eyes, which is a really great book. On August 15th, we have David Workman, John Betcher, and C.L. Kramer. And Shattered Tomorrows is a true story that happened when someone walked into the Oregon Museum and shot somebody, shot a whole bunch of people. So it's a true story that really happened. And on August 23rd, John Lesicrot is going to talk about The Hunter. So that's what's coming up next month. I'm going to have some fun. I'm going to take a break. This is my last show for this month, and I want to thank everyone so much for being on the show, and I want to thank Lori, and I want to thank, tomorrow's show on the World of Ink, I just got reminded, is at 1 p.m., and they're going to be talking about why good books should be made into movies, screenplays, info, and trying to write a screenplay. Our host, Marcia Cook, will be on with Jack Lemmon, author and screenwriter. And we are hoping that my last book, Faces Behind the Stones, which is told from the point of view of the dead person behind the stone, seriously, is going to be picked up. We're hoping that somebody's going to pick that up for an option, too. So it's being sent, but we don't know. We can only hope. What can I tell you?
Well,
you know what? I'm new with this, so I'm learning. And I never wrote a horror before, but it seems to be doing okay to have the character be dead and tell you how they got there and the mistakes they made. My last book came out on Sunday. It's called Bad Choices, and it's about teens that made mistakes. So it's for parents and educators, as myself, trying to hope that, you know, kids won't make mistakes. So if this was a great anthology, and I hope that you guys are going to do another one together. Hint, and I hope I get it because this is great. So what's your name? Are you going to do another one for this charity or the same charity?
You know, for a long time I was bouncing around with different charities, but I think I have settled on the money that we make at the raffles at the get-together, which I'd already told you what the get-together was. Those are always going to go to the One Way Farm. I will probably always do a benefit book for the AAF, the animal shelter, and proceeds from our book fair at the get-together are always going to go to the Conductive Learning Center. And I think it'll just make it easier if I just settle on those three wonderful local charities and just stick with them. So, I'm sure I'll do more for the AAF.
I hope you do, and I hope you send me the book so that we can have all of you on again, if you're going to use
wonderful.
The same authors. That would be fantastic, and I do have to announce, because I promised I would do it, my nephew is going to be bowling for the Jewish Community Center. Betty and Milton Cassie is going to be bowling for underprivileged children throughout the world. So if anybody wants the information about that, they can email me at riffy1@aol.com, and I'll tell you what you have to know, because I'm kind of proud of him. He's 17, and he's bowling for charity.
Wonderful.
And Lori, Jake did very well for that pediatric cancer. He made $2,675 by himself.
Fantastic.
Yeah, he did. Fantastic. He did a great job. I was really, really proud of him. So I want to thank everybody for today. I want to thank all of you, and I hope you all send me your next project so that I can read it and review it. And I hope to have you all on again, either as a group or separately. But this was probably the most fun I've had in a long time. So I want to thank Lori and Brenda and Verna and Catherine and Jules, I thank you so very, very much for today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
Thank you, Fran.
You're very welcome. Sandra, I think our next guest is not coming. And, it's sad. Do we have any other announcements that I have to make? Did I forget anything? Marcia, are you there? I don't think she's not on. Okay. for those of you that didn't hear the whole show, you can listen on iPod or podcast to the show, and it's on demand. And the authors were Laurie Foster, Brenda Jackson, Catherine Main, Bernard DePaul, and Jules Bennett. And as they said, that the proceeds are going to an animal hospital, AAF. Marcia, are you on the phone? No, she's not. Okay, and I announced everything. Yesterday I did announce my 5 picks for the month, and I can re-announce them again because I have a funny feeling that, like I said, the person, Margaret McLean, was supposed to be on. I guess maybe she had a conflict or whatever, and her publicist did tell her, so we're going to have to worry about her. Book is Under Oath, and maybe some other time. And my book, Bad Choices, came out on Sunday, so I'm okay. Marcia, are you there? Is she on the line? I can't tell. Is she there? Does she want to come on? She said she's online. Oh, she's online. She's not on the line. Okay. So on that note, we're going to be back again on August 15th with David Workman, John Betcher, and C.L. Kramer, and we're going to talk about it's Mystery and Murder Wednesday. And we'll talk to you again, and have a great day, and we'll see you August 15th. Bye. Thanks, Sandra.